Right, the Mishnah on top of some of that Amar Hamad says, Kidashti biti, I married off my daughter, Kidashtiya vigirashtiya, Tishiktana. I married her off, and I accepted Gerushin on her behalf while she was still a minor. Viharihiktana. And at this point in time, she still is a minor. She's still underage. Right? Ne'eman. In that instance, he is believed to have married her off, had her be divorced, right? And as long as she's still ktana. Whereas, if he says, Kidashtiya vigirashtiya kshiktana, if he says that I married her off and accepted Gerushin on her behalf when she was a ktana, and of course he's empowered to do as such because he's her father, but now when he's making this testimony, when he's giving this testimony, she is of age, meaning that she's over the age of bat mitzvah. Eino ne'eman. In this instance, he is not believed. Right? Nishfei, if he testifies that she was taken captive, ufa datiya, and I redeemed her from captivity. Ben shiktana, ben shikdola, it doesn't matter when he's testifying about her, whether she is a minor or whether she is of age of bat mitzvah, eino ne'eman. The father is not ne'eman in this instance. The Gemara is going to discuss why or what's the logic of the Mishnah. So Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. What's the difference between the Resha and the Seifa? The Resha being the case where the father is Ne'eman, the Seifa being the two cases where the father is Eino Ne'eman. So what drives the fact that, what is the reason behind the father's Ne'emanut in the first case when she's still a Tana? And what's the reason behind the father's Eino Ne'emanut, right, or Ine'emanut when it comes to Shivya, right, whether she's a Gadol or a Tana? Or when she's a gdola, that she's not believed by marriage and divorce. So what is this? Gemara says, Reisha biyode, Seifa lo biyode. The Reisha is in his hands to control. The Seifa is not in his hands to control. What does that mean? When she's still a ktana, he still has the ability to marry her off, right, and accept divorce on her behalf. Therefore, if he testifies that she was married off, or that she was divorced on his behalf, then we can believe him because he can generate or he can create the same situation again. Whereas, right. Whereas when it comes to a gdola, right, when it comes to, here the Gemara is really focused on shivya, when it comes to shvuya, he can't put her into captivity and then redeem her. I mean, that's something that's not within his purview, not within his control. So therefore, when he testifies about it, he is not believed. So the Gemara says, Vilo, is that really true? He doesn't have the ability to simulate shivya. Why not? What is the problem? What's the problem with a woman who has been in captivity? The problem with a woman who has been in captivity is that we say Shema Niv'ala, that maybe she was Niv'ala to the captors, and therefore she was Niv'ala the Psula, and now she is Pasul the Kuhuna. She may not marry a Kohen anymore. So, this father can generate the same situation, or recreate, or simulate that same situation, at least with the ktana. Let's say, at least with the ktana, he can simulate the situation by marrying her off to a chalal. If he marries off to a chalal, and she has bia with her husband, a chalal, that's posel her lekihuna. So he can recreate it. So why not be Ne'eman when he said that his daughter was b'shivya and then
u'sidia? Anyone
that went up to chalal. Right. The kapaslo. So Gemara is going to go through that. Kapaslo mikuna. Right. Says halo kasho. That's not a problem. Ki Rabbi Dusai ben Yehuda. Because this is like Rabbi Dusai ben Yehuda, Damar, Benot Yisrael, Mikvet, Hara, L'Chalalim. This is it's a Mishnah, right, that says when it comes to a Bat Yisrael, so further on in our Gemara, in the last parak, that a Bat Yisrael is married to a Chalal, right, Zachar, is Kshira L'Kuna. Right, that the Chalal that's born out of that situation is Kosher L'Kuna, and we know that there's a Hekesh between the wife and the daughter. So I just read you Rashi, what Rashi says here, it's the Mishnah further on, but the Bat Chlal Zachar Ksheira Lekuna. So if a woman marries a Kohen, that is a Chlal, then the offspring, Ishto Tara Zaro, became into Bat Ksheira, and the daughter who's born of such a marriage does not a Chlala, is not Psula Lekuna, and therefore if the daughter is not Psula Lekuna, that means that the wife is also not the Psula Lekuna, because it's a Hekesh between them. So now, if that's the case, then he doesn't have the ability to generate, right, or recreate or simulate this Psula, because even if he marries her off to Chalal, she's not Psula Lekuna. So Mar says, like David said, justifiably, what? Rabbi Yadol Nasi Alamamzer. All right, fine, not a chlal, but he can marry off to a mamzer. If he marries her off to a mamzer, then a mamzer is again makes her into a psul de kuhuna, because he married someone who is lo ra'ui lavo the cow, that is posel her to be joined into the cow. Ki Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, no problem. This Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva. What's the position of Rabbi Akiva? The position of Rabbi Akiva, we saw this in Yevamos, right, that Rabbi Akiva in other places believe that ain Dushim are not toasting even the Chai Ve'lavin. So what does it mean that generally the Chachamim believe that when it comes to Chai Ve'kares and Chai Ve'misa Bidei Basin, that the Dushim are not toasting. You can't generate a marriage in that instance. Since you can't generate a marriage, the father can't marry off his daughter to any one of those arayot. But when it comes to chiyuvei lavim, then we say that you can generate kiddushin, despite the fact that it's asur to marry them. The kiddushin are still kosher. So if that's the case, the father could marry his daughter off to these psulim, because the kiddushin would be tosin, and if the kiddushin are tosin, then he can generate or create this problem of the daughter being psul the kuna. But Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, believes that not only is people that arayot or illicit marriages that have a chiyuv kares and a chiyuv misa debidei shemayim associated with them, but even if they have a chiyuv lav associated with them, the kedushin are not tofsin. That's the case. The father can't marry off to a mamzer because that is quote unquote gilui arayot, that the kedushin are not tofsin. That's the case. The father can't simulate, right, again, that situation of shvuya because he can't marry her off to a mamzer. So Gemara says, wait, Rabbi Yodel Asiya Amana the Kohen Gadol, Uke Rabbi Simai. He can marry off to an Amana, if she's a widow, to a Kohen Gadol. Because a Amana the Kohen Gadol, then even Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Simai, believes that the Kedushin are Tobsin in that instance. So he can simulate this. He can take an Amana the Kohen Gadol, which will be posel her again, Lekihuna, and Kedushin are Tobsin even. Right, so that
he can't be
right, so that you have to say it's in an instance where to come up with the case like
Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda.
You have to say that the case is where he sold her off as a shivcha, and then they did yehud, and yehud was the case where it's her that's doing the yehud and not the father that's doing the yehud, and therefore she's an almana, and the father can't marry her off afterwards. That's what you have to say. The case is, that's the Gemara said in the past by almana the Kohen Gadol. That's the case that the Gemara came up with. The Tanya. Rabbi Simai Omer, Minakol Asar Rabbi Akiva Mamzer, Chutz Mi'amna the Kohen Gadol. Then Rabbi Akiva made everything into a Mamzer, because he says Ein Kedushin Tovsin, except for Amar the Kohen Gadol, which means that the Isur Aseh is the exception to that rule. Shemra Torah, Lo Yikach, Velo Yichalel. That the Torah by Amar the Kohen Gadol says, Lo Yikach, you should not take it, Velo Yichalel. And therefore his children will not be Chalalim, indicating that if he does take it, the only problem is chlal, and not a problem of mamzerus. All right, chilulim osev ein osev mamzerim. That the only thing I can generate is a iser chlal, but it cannot generate a iser mamzer. So Gemara says, well, we can establish a mishnah like Rabbi Yishevav. Right? Rabbi Yishevav says, Amar bo minitzaveach al Akiva ben Yosef. Let us go shout that Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef. Let's tell him he's wrong. Shaya omer koshen lo bia b'Israel avlay mamzer. So he thinks. What does Rabbi Yishevav think of Rabbi Akiva's position? He thinks that Rabbi Akiva believes that any isur generates a mamzer, even if it's amanala going gadol b'tenasei, or if it's lo yitach lo yichalel. He thinks that Rabbi Akiva believes, and that's why he's jumping on Rabbi Akiva's position. Says Rabbi Akiva believes everybody is mamzerim, that there is no way not to have a mamzer when you have a inappropriate marriage. Now the Gemara says, "Anichol the Rabbi Yishevav is the tamei denafshei, the tamei denafshei shapir." Right? If Rabbi Yishevav was coming and making an independent statement, which means that he wants to make an independent statement that Rabbi Akiva makes an isurim in every instance. In every instance, there's an isur. Anytime there's an illicit marriage, you generate a mamzer. Then we can explain our mishnah according to Rabbi Yishevav and say, case of our mishnah is that the father can't simulate the shvuya, because there is no case where you can have kedushin tovsin with a person that will make her into a chlal, make her into a psul de kuna. But if you believe ela de apuke mitame de Rabbi Simai kaate, if Rabbi Yishevav's statement was made in the context of Rabbi Simai, that means what? That he only was saying about Amon of the Kohen Gadol. That I disagree with you when it comes to Amon of the Kohen Gadol. I disagree with you and say even there Rabbi Kiva believes it's a mamzer. But there are other Isurim. Isurim say like, Lo yavo amoni amoni moabi b'kal Hashem, or Dor Rivi'i, Dor Asri, Lo yavo heina, or by Edomites, right? When it comes in Edomi, right, those types of things would not be included in the halacha of Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Yishvab, if you say that he made his statement in the context of Rabbi Simai. Because there, it's look at Rashi, Lachukim Rabbi Simai, Ativ, Lo Sif, Elo Lachavi, Lavim, Tikhuna. It's only coming to a day, add in things like Amunala, Kohen Gadol, those instances, about Mitzri and Edomi, Tokim of the Roach, and Chayvei Atsei, Mother de Kishuv Tosin. Then he would agree that if he's only coming to reject Rabbi Simai's position, Rabbi Simai's position is that Rabbi Akiva says, by Amunah L'Kohen Gadol, it's not a mamzer. Rabbi Shifrah says, no, you're wrong. Amunah L'Kohen Gadol is a mamzer, but that means he's not addressing Edomi, Moabi, things that are just an Isur Asay. In those instances, then what? Then even Rabbi Akiva makes it to Kiddush and Tobsin. So again, you can explain the mission of Rabbi Shishvah made a statement independently, says Rabbi Akiva makes mamzerim out of everything. But if he's only addressing Rabbi Simai, we still have cases where the father can simulate, right, what a Shvoya is. What is he? She can marry her off to a Mitzri. He can marry her off to a Moabi, and he can make her up to the Kuna. So where it says, we're owed, and this is the Shafuke, Mitami Rabbi Simai, Gata, Rabbi Yadu, Asil, the Chayvi Aset. And then he can marry her off to a Chayvi Aset, simulate Psul, the Kuna, and we have no answer. So Amar Abashi, now this is a stronger question. You know, until now, the Gemara is dealing with technical issues. The stronger question is, Vitisbara, is this whole explanation logical? Why am I saying is it logical? Because Reisha Mishum Debiyadohu, right, the Reisha, it's because it's in his control. We say that the Reisha, the reason why by Ektana he's Naaman, because if she's Ektana now, it's within his control to marry her off and to divorce her. It says, Nibiyado Lekacha, says, true, it's within his control to marry her off, Biyado Lagarsha, he can't generate divorce. Divorce is up to the husband. Right, he can accept it. He's a passive party when it comes to divorce. Now, number one, you have a problem. You can't accept it. But even more, we're even making a quantum leap here that he has control to marry off. That's not true either. Right, okay, by divorce, we say for sure he doesn't have control because that's in the purview of the husband. But even by kiddushin, you need another party to accept. I mean, he can marry her off. He has the ability to accept Kiddushin on her behalf. But that is, he has to find a suitor. And if there's no suitor who's willing to do it, he can't force somebody to marry her. That's not even in his control. So again, that cannot be the explanation of our Mishnah. Ella, Amar Ravashi offers an alternative explanation of our Mishnah. Reisha, Rachmana, Hemne, Ravuna. The Reisha, the father, is believed like Ravuna. Dama Ravuna, Marav, Minayin, the Av, Shneman, the Sword, Bito, Minat Torah. How do we know that a father has the ability to be Oser, his daughter, as an Eshet Ish, Minat Torah? Shnemar, by the case of Motzi Shemra, it says, Et Biti Natati L'Isha Zeh. That I gave my daughter over to this man. So here's a father testifying that she is an Eshet Ish. L'Ish Atra. Right, but L'Isha Atra means I can be Oser her on the whole world. And if he says I married up to some man, then he's Oser her on the whole world. Hazeh. When he says Hazeh, then it means Hetira. Then he's Matir her to the rest of the world except for the, you know, I mean, that she's married to this guy and everybody else, right? He's Matir to this guy, everybody else is Asur, but we know who she's married to. Right? Then he says, the Gemara says, Bin Nisuyin Hemne. When it comes to marriage, the father has such a Nemanus, but La'av, right? But Shibuya Lohemne. When it comes to captivity, the father is not believed. So when it comes to marriage, we can say the father can be testified and say he's Neman, that I married her off and that I accepted Gerushin. In matters of Kiddushin and Gerushin, he's Neman. But in matters of Shvuyat, he's not Neman, because the Torah never gave him or empowered him to have that Neman. She's a Nara or Ktana. When she's a Nara or Ktana, the father's Neman because he can say it, Biti Natat Elisha Zeh. But when she's a Bogeret, and it's not within his control, there the Torah did not believe him, because the case by Moshe Shemra is the case where she is either a Nara or a Tana, because it says he married her off. The only instance where he can marry her off is a Nara or a Tana. That's when the father's believe. So when she's a Tana or when she's a Nara, he's believed. When she's a Gedola, he's not believed. And Shvuya is not within his purview at all. He's not Nemon, he is no Nemon, when it comes to Shvuya. Misha Amar, B'sha'at Mitato, Yesh B'banim, Ne'aman. The time of his death, he's in his deathbed, he says, I have children. He is Naaman. Yeshli Achim, he says, I have brothers, Enu Naaman. So what's the difference? What the difference is, of course, if he says, I have children, then his wife now is no longer necessary to perform yibum. So there, when he's matir, his wife, he's nema. Whereas if he says, I have brothers that weren't known about before, now he's obligating her in yibum. He's obligating her in yibum, that he does not have nemanos for. So Mar says, now, Alma, from this, from our Mishnah, you can conclude, neman hatir, he's able to be, his nemanos relates to being matir, meaning that freeing her from yibum, but ain't neman hatir, right, that he does not have the ability to, right, put her into a position where now she is in a position of yisur. Neman matisin to loka Rabbi Natan, let's say our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Natan, the Tanya of Abrais, Bishat Kiddushin Amar. The time he's about to get married, he says to her, Yesh lo banim, right, Bishat Mita Amar, in lo banim. Time he's getting married to her, he says, I do have children. The time that he, on his deathbed, he says, I don't have any children. I lied to you, or I was wrong when I got married to you. Why did he tell her when he was getting married, I have children? Because the woman wasn't willing to get married to him on the possibility that she would fall to Yibum later on. So the time he married, he says, you know what, like, yeah, I really do have children. That way she won't be having Yibum. On his deathbed, he says, you know what, I really lied to you when we got married. I do have, I do, right, I don't have children, and now you're chayiv in Yibum. You're chayiv in Yibum. Right. Bishat, Rashi points out here, very good, show us the question. If that's the case, then it's a mechach tos. So Rashi says that in a case where he told her this, but it wasn't a condition in the Kiddushin. It was not al-manat. Right? This was not an explicit t'nai in the Kiddushin. The discussions that they had beforehand, and therefore the Kiddushin were not premised on this. And if it fails, that doesn't mean the Kiddushin were okir me kara. I know, only in cases where it's so obvious, right, where it was so obvious, that's what Tosus and Rashi said before, that only when the T'nai is so implicit and obvious do we say that it, even if you didn't state it, it's part of the Mecca. Over here, right, I don't think this, you would say, is automatically a part of their marriage contract. Right, now, B'shat Kiddushin Amar in Lo Achim, again, same type of case where he says, at the time he got married, he says, I have no brothers. Right, B'shat Mita Amar Yesh Lo Achim. Then all of a sudden, in his deathbed, he says, oh, you know what, really, I do have brothers, which is going to obligate her in Yibum. The Neman the Hatir, Vein Neman the Asur. Sounds like our Mishnah. He's believed when it comes to being matched with a woman, in order to, he doesn't have to form Yibum, but Ein Neman the Asur. So in each of these instances, he will not be believed, because he's now generating a Yisur Yibum over here, so that he won't be able to do. Divrei Rabbi. That's Rabbi's position. Rabbi Natan Omer, Af Neman the Asur. Rabbi Natan says that he's believed even to put her into a position of Yisur, which would be against our Mishnah. So that's what we're saying now. Rabbi Natan cannot be the author of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah only says, Lahatir v'nat le'etzor. So Amarava shani hatom. That the case in the Braisa is different. Kevin deshav t'mita kahadar bay, ema kushtu ke'amar. Because he's reversing his position at his deathbed, then we say he's telling the truth. Why is that? So if you're Rashi, what does that mean, the kushtu ke'amar, when he's reversing on his deathbed? Because since he's reversing his original position at Shamita, he wants it shelo yehei avon talui bo. He doesn't want it to have to live in that with this over his head. He's on his deathbed, right? He doesn't die with this over his head, right? That he's about to die. He says, you know what? I can't live with this, because if I do this, this woman's going to be beisur, or there's going to be a problem, and I can't live with that situation. I can lie when I'm going to kiddushin. I can lie about it a long time before this. Maybe it'll never become an issue. But now that's going to be an issue, and it's going to be his fault that there's an Easter here on his deathbed. He says he's telling the truth. The fact that he's reversing his vision right on his deathbed must be telling the truth. And that we see in other places that there's a certain level of nemonus when it comes to one's deathbed, because he has this factor that's hanging over his head that there is the possibility. Now he's going to judgment. This is his vidui. He wants to go clean with a clean slate, so they're telling the truth. And my brother-in-law told me this. I didn't know this, but in American law, in general, American law, their hearsay is not acceptable evidence. Hearsay is not acceptable evidence in court. There are exceptions to that. One of the exceptions is a person on their deathbed. A person on their deathbed has an extra tokef of nemanus that even hearsay, right, in that instance will be believed. Right, nowadays, the courts have narrowed that, but I think that's really true in a society where, in a religious society, right? When you're on your deathbed, that people tell the truth, or really, really want to make sure and straighten things out, is when they have a certain, you know, religious, compelling religious reason to say the truth before they die. They want to clear the tables before they die. But, you know, today, where you're a very secular society, I don't know if you have that same sort of right, compelling reasons to say that a person believes when they're on their deathbed. But again, we see that the deathbed is the thing that is, it brings a person to a higher level of ne'emanus. So I'm Amalei Abaye, Lav Kol Dekeinu. Then it shouldn't be a Kal V'Chomer. Why? Hashto Mahatom Dekom Morile LeDibure Amar Tushta Kamar. Over here, where he's clearly undermining his previous statement, meaning that first of all, he made an opposite statement beforehand. Now he reverses the position, because he's on his death, we believe him. Our Mishnah, where he never undermined a previous statement, then, certainly he should be believed. I mean that, you need a deathbed to say that he's believed here because he's reversing a position. But if he never told anything else, why shouldn't he be believed? He should have nemonis in this case. Right, this is this case. Ambari says, Matnizan, Dulo Muchsaklan Ba'ache, Dulo Muchsaklan Bibani. Our Mishnah is a case where he has a chazaka that he has no brothers. That he has brothers and he does not have children. Right? So again, the lo muksaklan ba'ache, we have no chazaka that he has brothers, the lo muksaklan bibani, and he has no children. So in a case where he has no brothers and no children, there is no yibum to speak about, right? Because it's irrelevant that he doesn't have children because he has no brothers. So the underlying chazaka now is that there is no yibum in this instance. Damrinan came into the muksaklan bibani, the lo ba'ache, amar yeshli banim, ne'eman. Yeshli achim, enu ne'eman. So in this case, if his statement upholds the chazaka that exists, then we say he's telling the truth and he's believed. Because we have a chazaka prior to the marriage that he does not have brothers, he does not have children, he's believed because all he's doing is being mami, the chazaka where it was before. The chazaka established that she didn't need yibum, and when he says I have children, he's preserving that chazaka, which is that she doesn't need yibum. On the other hand, if he comes along and says that I have brothers, there he's not ne'eman because now he's changing what the chazaka established. The chazaka said she doesn't need yibum, and now he's trying to come and undermine that chazaka by saying he has brothers. That he doesn't have the ability to do. Whereas, Lavko Kimine, that's the Leah Kulama. He doesn't have the ability to go ahead and be oath to her on the whole world. Alright, now Brita, the case of the Brita is what? A case that Mukhsaklan Ba'ache, Velo Mukhsaklan Ba'bane. It's a case where the chazaka is that he does have brothers, and he does not have children. So in this instance, what's the default? The default is that she must perform yibum. That's the default case over here. She's going to perform yibum. He has brothers, no children. We establish as a chazaka that she is going to have to perform yibum. Damrinan, mali l'shakya. Then we say, in this instance, why should he lie about it? What is the mali l'shakya? That means, at the time of marriage, when he comes into the marriage, he told her, either I don't have brothers, or he told her, I do have children. In that case, he's saying, you do not require yibum. So what's the mali l'shakya? Why? My kamar, the mifter of yibum. Why, when he's going to the marriage, is he lying to her and saying, I do have children, or I don't have a brother, in order to prevent her from having to do yibum? So guess what? Matzi amar patran alach pegita. He has an alternative explanation, right, for what he did, which is, or how to prevent her from becoming a yibum. What's that? He can say, I'll give you a gift. He can say this one, don't worry about yibum. I'll give you a gift before I die. If I give you a gift before I die, then you won't be a chayavet be yibum. So I can prevent yibum from happening by giving you a gift later on. So by doing that, he can say, when he comes along now in the beginning of the marriage and says, I do have sons, I don't have brothers, he has an added level of nemonus from amigo. He could have prevented the whole problem of yibum and said, I could have given you a gift. The fact that he went with this explanation, which is, that I do have children, or I don't have a brother, means mali shaker, why should he have lied? So now, why should he have lied? Now gives him an added dimension of nemonus at the time of the marriage. So if that's the case, what happens? Rebbe Zavar, mali shaker ke'edim dami. When a person has amigo, where there's no reason for him to lie, and he goes ahead and makes a statement like that, it's the equivalent of having edus over here. It's the equivalent of having two edim come along and testify, right? They testify that he does have children or he doesn't have a brother. Vatu edim akri chazaka. These edim are able to undermine the original chazaka. The original chazaka, which again, that chazaka is not established through edus. That chazaka is not established that there were edim that said he had brothers or he didn't have children. It was just that was a known thing in the community, known thing in the Right. So this edus that comes along, when you have mali yashaka, this edus undermines the chazaka. Therefore, if it undermines the chazaka, right, then the chazaka is no longer in the way, let's say. And later on his deathbed, when he comes now to reverse his position, he's trying to undermine something that was given with edus. So in that case, he can only be matir, he can't be oser. That's what Rabbi says. Rabbi Nathan Savar, mali l'shaker, ki chazaka dami. That when you say mali l'shaker, right, that only has the same value, or is on the same level as the chazaka. Therefore, lo'ati chazaka, va'akra chazaka l'gamre. A chazaka, now when he says, at the time of the marriage, when he says, I have children, or I don't have a brother, what is he trying to do? Undermine the first chazaka. That, he can only do partially, he can't do it fully. And therefore, later on in his life, at the deathbed, when he comes along and says, like the original chazaka, he's believed both lahatir or le'etzor, both to make him asur and to be matir. Now Rashi points out over here, if he does not reverse his position on his deathbed, he will be believed. Even according to Rabbi Natan, even though it's chazaka against chazaka, he will be believed. He comes into the marriage and says, I have children, or I don't have a brother, and that goes up against the original chazaka that he did have a brother and he didn't have children, that will be powerful enough to prevent Abraham having to do yibum. It's only if later on in his life does he reverse his position on his deathbed, does the original chazaka then come back to life. Why is that? Rashi says, at the end of this large Rashi here in the narrow lines, he says, Miu, ilo hadarbe havisharia li'alma. If he didn't reverse his position, he would believe. Nehizalo achi chazaka ba'akra chazaka li'gamre. Alright, it doesn't undermine a chazaka totally. Ure, miu itrai. But it does cast aspersions on the original chazakah. And as long as we don't have a statement that undermines his statement at the time of the Kiddushin, here's the case, what? He has another reason to be believed over here, because if he over here is lying, to whose benefit is it? It's to the benefit of the woman, right? That she doesn't have to perform yibum. So we say in general, a person does not sin, and it's not to his benefit. So he's not going to say something, a statement that this woman doesn't need yibum, if it's really not to his benefit. And if he really had brothers, he reversed his position on his deathbed. The fact that he doesn't reverse his position on his deathbed indicates to us that the original statement he made at the time of Kiddushin is enough to remove the original chazakah. Right? So just to go over this again, we have a chazakah that establishes that she needs to do yibum. Right? Then, at the time of Kiddushin, he comes along and makes a statement that says that she will not have to perform yibum. He undermines the original chazaka that is there. So he undermines it. Then, later on in his deathbed, he says that she does need yibum. He goes back to what was the original chazaka. So now, in this instance, what matters is in the middle case, the middle issue when he said she wasn't chayev at the yibum. How strong was that statement? So according to Rabbi, that statement was so strong, it's the equivalent of Edim coming along. Since it's the equivalent of Edim coming along, first of all, you undermine the original chazaka, and then number two is, on his deathbed, he does not have the ability to undermine his new statement, because it's like as if there was Edim there, and he can't undermine it. Right now, on the other hand, according to Rabbi Natan, the second statement where he says she is not chayevet b'yibum is only on the same level as the original chazaka. Since it's only on the original level, at the same level as the original chazaka, when he reverses it later on in his life, now we have the original chazaka, plus his reversal at the end of his life, they can override the chazaki, or the statement he made at the time of Kiddushin, that she's not chayevet b'yibum. But, as Rashi points out, if he does not reverse his position at the end of his life, then his statement is enough at the time of Kiddushin to say she won't require yibum, because we have this little extra, first of all, he cast aspersions on the original chazaka, and number two is, if he was really lying on his deathbed, he would reverse himself, because he doesn't want to sin, and it all accrues to her benefit, but she doesn't perform yibum, it's not to his benefit, right? So therefore we say he would have told the truth on his deathbed. The fact that he doesn't gives extra tokus to his statement at the time of Kiddushin, and because of that, we say she does not require yibum, even according to Rabbi Natan, if at the end of his life he doesn't reverse his position. Now to you guys on the email here, is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, which is deals with some of the issues or the stuff that we are speaking about today. So listen to this halacha, right? This halacha is showcase. You have a showcase. Shehid alav eid achad sheshachat shlo hugan. One aid comes along and testifies that this showcase did a non-kosher shechita. Behu machishav. And the showcase himself says it's not true. It was a kosher tefet. Then, Edach, this is a Edachad v'Hachasha, Lakumu. It's one against one. When you have an Edachad, one Edachad, you have the Edachad against the testimony of the Shochet. Lakumu, it's nothing. Vayidatmo, Mutalechol, Mikanu Laba. This Eid can eat from the Shochet in the future. He can't eat this meat because he's Shavya Nafsha Katik Chazura, but he can eat from his Shkita in the future. Everything's according to what we know about the Shochet, what type of person he is. We have to be careful about these things to know whether there are other aspersions on the Shochet already, so on. So the Shochet basically says, I have one Eid against another Eid, and in this instance, right, in this instance, we don't believe the Eid Echad that comes and says, right, that he is Asur. Now, why is that? It turns out, the Taz is probably, the Taz over here brings it down, but in general, the Taz brings down the Ritva, who argues on this position, and in addition to that, almost all the Achronim argue on this conclusion of the Shulchan Aruch. And why is that? What is the position of the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch is based on a principle that we have, that is Eid Echad is Neman B'Isurim. Why is the Shulchan believed over here? He's believed over here because he's a Eid Echad Neman B'Isurim. We have another aid that comes along and testifies against him. So we have aid against aid. But, truthfully, we know that it's a principle established by the Gemara, that aid echad ne'eman b'isurim makes this into two aids. It makes it as if he testified as two aids. When you have aid echad ne'eman b'isurim, when someone comes to testify against that then, the original person who is ne'eman gets the ne'emanus of two aids. And therefore, if you want to undermine that, you need two aids to undermine it. Okay, that's why we're here, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin. He says, aid echad ne'eman b'isurim, the Shulchan ne'eman, he has Ne'emanus like two Eidim. Since he has Ne'emanus like two Eidim, when this Eid Echad comes and testifies against him, he has no power to undermine the original statement. So that's the establishment, that's the principle that Shulchan Aruch is going by. The truth is that the Ritva, other Rishonim, argue on the Shulchan Aruch premise, and they say that when we say Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim gets the tokeh from Shnu Eidim, that's only Dine issues. That only comes in Dine issues. But when it comes to other issues of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim, he remains a Eid Echad. If that's the case over here, what's the halacha going to be in this case? The halacha is going to be, you have Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim, you have the Shochet, then you have an Eid Echad that comes along and makish him, and says that it's, right, it's problematic, and that Eid Echad, right, is against this, right, then you get an Eid Echad versus Eid Echad, and therefore the meat is going to be, it's going to be asur, not only to the Eid himself, but it's going to be asur the Olam, because you've undermined the Ne'emanus of the Shochet over here. Because you have Eid against Eid, his Ne'emanus goes away. His only Ne'emanus came from the fact that he was Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim. We took that away with the Achasha of the other Eid. If the Achasha of the other Eid, there's no longer this Ne'emanus of the Shochet, and the meat will be Asura. So very similar to our case over here. In our case over here, the question of whether we establish this Eidus, whether it's Chazakah, will change whether you can undermine it later on. Right? Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Natan's argument has to do with the Chazak at the time of Kiddushin, the statement that he makes, when you say Malu L'Shakir, right, does that make it like Eilus? Or is Malu L'Shakir just like another Chazakah? Right, so again, like the case in the Shulchan Aruch, right, if you say Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim becomes like Eilus, then the next Eid can't come and undermine it. So same thing over here, well, if it's Malu L'Shakir becomes like Eidim, then the later Chazak, his later statement can't come and undermine it. Whereas if you believe Malu L'Shakir is just equivalent of a Chazakah, then his later statement can come and undermine his first statement. It's different principles. Mali Shakir and Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim, but the question is that you can elevate them to a level where they have Eidus, the equivalent of Eidus. The more important why I brought this down is that there's a Pitzchei Tshuva here. Pitzchei Tshuva brings down an amazing case over here. It says, I'll read it to you. It's a case, it has two of the principles that we established over here. It says, a Shochet should not follow Mishkat. You have a Shochet, it's Pitzchei Tshuva and Yoredeya. Siman Aleph, it's Aleph Yudal. Alright, in the Pitzchei Tshuva. It says, the Shochet should not follow Mishkat, Gashir Chbir Alav Chelyom. Got very sick. He's on his deathbed. He's about to die. Shalach l'kor at the rav. Calls in the rav on his deathbed. He says, "Amar lo, shorotze l'hitvadol tachata'av." He wants to take vidoy on his deathbed. V'ish lo yayim ma'em b'cheder. And there was nobody else in the room with them. V'amar, ha'shokhei derech vidoy, shebinu rav nechshal b'biyot asurot. And when he was a younger man, he was involved in illicit relations. V'samach l'choyo, right before he fell to his death. Matzah heipami matzakim paku machar shchita. After the shkita, he found that his knife was not kosher. The hichshir, and it was makshir the meat. The kosher shema rav davardeh, badakoto mishafui badak. He tested him whether he was of sound mind, right? Ve'ra'ash, datom yushev adalav, that he was a clear of sound mind. Then, balacha rav, the rav walks out of the room, the hitrif, kol kli rishon shal bali batim. He asked for every kli rishon on the bali batim, because they had traces. This guy, he says that there wasn't a person, there's not a person in the town that couldn't have bought meat from these last five animals that he checked. He's the only butcher in town. It's clear that everybody had tarfus, and they had to enikli rishon, and they had to be matar.
Ubatof yomim, or yomim, amad, shochet mechal yo.
Suddenly, he got better.
Beruach acheret imo.
And he had a different tune. He was singing a different tune now.
Umachish et arav.
And now he is, right, disagreeing with what the Rav said. He said, lo pa'alti oven, because I did nothing wrong.
Lo yitvadak lo.
And I never made such a vidui.
Umeolam lo asat sakim pagum achar shkita.
Lo hadu dvarim meolam.
Never happened. And now you have, what? Two things. One is the shochet ne'eman, right, that one because of what he admitted before. And number two is the Rav ne'eman.
Right, is the Rav ne'eman over here, because now you have, the only person in the room was Rav, the Rav, and you have eight akad versus eight akad.
The first one is the Rav and ne'emanus.
And number two is the shochet believe later on that he can go back to being a shochet, right, because he loses his ne'emanus.
So over here, they paskin, some of the achronim paskin against this Rav, and said he was wrong. He was wrong, because you have eight akad,
right, then this Rav has no ne'emanus to be posed to this shochet, and therefore the Rav did wrong over here.
The Pitzchei Shuva, it comes along and brings down, and he says,
he was wrong to originally, before the guy got better.
Yeah, even before he got better, to be Oser.
Because when the butcher originally shechted the animals, he was Neman Kishnehazen. He was Neman Neman Bitzurim, he let them go from Itachat Yadol as Shevet. Right, so when the butcher originally shechted the animals, he let them go as Behemoth Sherot. And since they were Behemoth Sherot, he was Erechad Neman Bitzurim, like two Ezim. Then when the broth comes later on, he's Hoser like an Erechad. Right? So it's only the Rav. We don't have Odas Baldin. We don't have the Rav testifying that there is Odas Baldin. So you only have the testimony of Eid Echad. It's not that he did it in front of two Eidim. If he did it in front of two Eidim, you're right, Odas Baldin. But here, they only have an Eid Echad. That ain't all we have left now is Eid Echad. So you can't be Makashit. So number one, he was wrong for puzzling his stuff. Number two is he shouldn't be Matari. What I brought this down for is what? There's others who bring a proof here that first of all, like we said before, the Ritva and others believe that when you say Erechad B'nei B'Yisroel, it's not like Shnei Eidim, right? That is only by, right? It's only like Shnei Eidim by Ishus. But by Isur, like Shah Kashus, that's not true. So first of all, the Rav's right, because it's eight against eight, because the original butcher, when he let the stuff go with Kashus, he only has an eight Echad. Now the Rav's an eight Echad, so he has the ability to depose to it. Number two, is the Rav believe about this testimony of this? Listen to this. Both. The Yesh Raglayim LeDavar, right? There is circumstantial evidence LaHamid LeDavar Rav Acharonim to believe to the later statement of the butcher. Ho Vidhadeh Zeh B'Chol Yom. He did it when he was sick on his deathbed. V'Amar Derech Tshuva, right? And he did it in a winter that was Tshuva. V'Gan Ein Adam Metzim Atro Asmo Rasha Lo Shach B'Zeh. That is not relevant over here. Guy's on his deathbed. That's what we said before. Right? We established before the principle that when a person's on their deathbed, they tell the truth. That a person is compelled to tell the truth on their deathbed. He says here also, the fact that the butcher, even if you have eight achad versus eight achad, the fact that the butcher was saying on his deathbed, right, there's a lot of reason to believe that his vidui over here is a true statement. And not the statement that he made before, which was that everything was kosher. Because he did it derech tshuva, and there's overwhelming evidence that he did it in a manner that was on his deathbed that he really wanted to tell the truth. Right, and then the Indian Imam Rav Ne'eman negative shochet helad Ne'eman. He says that he is Ne'eman, right? Because again, that the shochet doesn't have the Ne'emanos like two Eidim, and therefore the Rav can come along and be okay with the statement of the.
Okay, now the Mishnah begins. A mekadesh et bitos dam ain't a bokeret bichlal. Person who marries off his daughters, then generally wouldn't say that it does not include a daughter who is above the age where her father is empowered to marry her off. Mishlo yeshlo shtei kitot banot, person who has two sets of daughters, meaning that he has from one wife and then another wife. This is a case that we saw earlier in the Grand Kedushin. Mishtei nashim, from two women. V'amar kidashit biti hagdola, I married off my older daughter. Venodeim gdola shibgdolot, I don't know if it means the oldest of the first wife, meaning that the oldest of the oldest. Oh, gdola shibgtanot, or I don't know if it means the older of the younger set. Oh, ktana shbigdolot, or maybe it's the youngest of the older set. She gdola mina gdolot shbigtanot, who's older than even the oldest of the second set of daughters, the kids from the second wife. Kulan asurot, all of them are restricted. Chutz mina ktana shbigtanot, except for the youngest of the youngest. Certainly she's not called Gedola, because she's not relative to no one else, is she considered Gedola? Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kulan Mutarot, that everyone is Mutar, except Chutz Min HaGedola Shebegedolot, except for the oldest of the oldest grouping, because we only assume that when he said Gedola, he took the most unambiguous explanation for that term, that would be the oldest of the oldest. There, everyone else is mutarot, meaning that they don't require a get from this individual, and only the oldest one will require a get, as opposed to Rabbi Meir, who believes that everyone requires a get, except for the youngest of the youngest. Kidashi et biti aktana. So now, what if he did it the other way around? He said, I married off my younger daughter. I don't know if it means the youngest, meaning the youngest even of the second set of children that I had, or maybe it's the youngest of the first set of children I have, or maybe it's even the oldest of the second set of children I have, because she's still younger than the youngest of the first set of children. Again, Rabbi Meir believed that everyone is restricted, meaning everyone will acquire a get in order to free them, because we assume that Ketana can be anyone except for the oldest of the oldest, because relative to no one else is she considered Ketana. Everyone else, except for the oldest and the oldest set, relative to someone else is considered a Ketana. Rabbi Yosef Meir, Kulan Mutarot Chutz Min HaKetana Shebeketanot. Everyone is Mutarot except for the youngest of the youngest. Again, because Rabbi Yossi believes that when you said young, you meant the most unambiguous explanation for young, and that would be the youngest of the youngest. Now the Gemara says, Haktanot Bichlau. So the assumption is, in the first statement in the Mishnah, a person who is Mekadesh is Bitostam, in a Bogrot Bichlau. That means that any girl who's outside of the reach of her father to marry her off, he's not included. But anybody who is below the age of Bogaret, someone who's a Ketana or Nara, would be included in a statement by the father who says that he's Mekadesh all his daughter. So she wouldn't be included. Shema Mina. So what can we learn from this? Even though he has multiple daughters, say he has four daughters, so then one of them is a Bogeret, or two of them are Bogrot, and two of them are Ketanot. So the Bogrot are excluded because he doesn't have power to marry them off. Yeah, but when he says, I married my daughter off to you, it includes the two youngest daughters, the two Ketanot there. Even though there's no way to consummate this marriage. I mean that it's a Kedushin, She'ain Misurin the Bia. In the end, he can't have Bia because there's a suffix between two Achot, and therefore there's a problem or possibility of Erva, and therefore he won't allow him to complete the marriage. So from this you could say, Shema Mina, Kedushin ain't Misurin the Bia, have a Kedushin. That Kedushin that don't end up and be able to be consummated in Bia, nevertheless they're a good Kedushin. We saw this earlier, this is a Machlokas between Abai and Rava, and we can conclude from this Mishnah, like the opinion that Kedushin, She'ain Misurin the Bia are good Kedushin. Where it says, no, there's only one Bogeret and one Ketana. So the Mishnah comes to say, if I marry off my daughter Stam, I don't include the Bogeret, I include the Ketana. Where it says, Va-Bogrot Ketani. It says in plural the word Bogrot. Bogrot implies that there was more than one daughter who was older, and by definition, right, then the Diuk would say that I also have more than one daughter who is younger. So my Bogrot, Bogrot Alma. Bogrot is not plural because he has multiple daughters or has multiple Bogrot daughters, but rather Bogrot is plural because it means Bogrot in general are not covered by statements of their father, whereas Ketanot are. Gemara says, Pshita, then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? If the Mishnah just says that he has one daughter who is not in his control, one daughter that is in his control, if he marries off his daughters in general, then just the Ketana is married, not the Bogeret. Of course, Bogeret, Mavititayu. Bogeret, he has no control over. So why would you even have a Havamina that to include such a daughter in his statements? Now, what becomes the Chiddush of the Mishnah? Now, Bishlamo, if you say that he had multiple daughters, he had a number of daughters over the age where he couldn't control them, and a number of daughters below the age where he couldn't, where he had the ability to marry them off, then the Chiddush of the Mishnah is exactly that. That even though it's Kedushin Shein Misurin in the Bia, it is a good Kedushin. But now that we've established that the way we're establishing the Mishnah is that it's one Bogeret and one Ketana, then obviously when he makes the statement of Bito, the only thing it can mean is his daughter that's a Ketana, the Bogeret's out. So what are you teaching me? So the Gemara says, Ochel my skin. And the case here is, like the Gemara established earlier on in Aleph to answer this problem, the Shavite Shaliach, right? That the daughter Bogeret made her father a Shaliach to marry her off. So now that he's both, he has the power to marry off his younger daughter, the Ketana. He also is empowered through as an agent to marry off his older daughter. So I would think now, when he goes and makes a statement, I married off my daughter, includes both his daughter that he has control over, the Ketana, as well as the daughter that he is an agent for. So So Kamash Malan, our Mishnah teacher, says, no, the lo shavikinish mide de itle hanoa mine, vavid mide de leid lehamanoa mine. A father was going to, or would not give up his ability to get something where he gets a benefit, meaning where he keeps the kesef kiddushin. By the ktano, the kesef kiddushin go to the father. By the bogeret, even though he's an agent for the daughter, the money goes back to the daughter. The kesef kiddushin belongs to the daughter. So we say, no, a father will never leave the opportunity to benefit himself, which means to collect the kesef kiddushin and include his daughter with bogeret, where he won't get it. So there's no reason to get confused over here. So milo askina, Gemara says, maybe the case is darmalei kiddushei lach. How do you say that that's, why is that the Chiddush of the Mishnah? Maybe the case in the Mishnah is when the daughter says, you be my agent, and you get to keep the Kesef Kiddushin. So over here, there's no difference between the Ketana and the Bogeret. Both of them, the money of the Kiddushin will go to the father. So why don't we say, when the father goes and Mekadosh his Bito, it includes both of them. Where it says, afilo achilo shavak inish mitzvah deram yalei, ve'aviyed mitzvah delo ram yalei. Nevertheless, the father would never give up a mitzvah that belonged to him, versus a mitzvah that belongs to someone else. What does that mean, a mitzvah that belongs to him versus a mitzvah that belongs to someone else? Because when it comes to his daughter, Zuktano, he's the one who's obligated to marry her off. That we learned earlier again in the Masechta, because it says in Yirmiyahu, Bet benotechem tnu lanashim, that you have to give your daughters to men. So you have to either, you have to dress them up, give them a good dowry, ensure they get married. So a father who has that obligation on him, he'll discharge that obligation before he takes care of his daughter, who's a bogeret. Daughter who's a bogeret, that's not his obligation to marry her off anymore. She's on her own now. She's on her own reconnaissance, her own volition. She gets married, and therefore he's not in the parsha of being marrying off this daughter, or having a mitzvah for marrying off this daughter. So therefore, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Even though there's only one bogeret and one ketana, and the bogeret made the father a shliach, nevertheless, we say when he says bito stam, when he just says, I married off my daughter, he means only the ketana, because what he has first and foremost on his mind is the thing that he's obligated to do, that's marry off that daughter. When it comes to the bogeret, where he's an agent, that he has in the back of his mind, that's not the first and foremost thing on his mind. So now the Gemara continues. Mishesh lo shtei kitei banot. Right, the Mishnah says that a person who has two sets of daughters from two different women, v'tzricha, right, we need these two cases. Diyashminen kamaita. But if you had just told me the case of Gidola, Bahach kamar Rabbi Meir. On that case, Rabbi Meir believes that all of them are sefek. Kaven de'ika zutra mino. Because there's always someone who is younger. Bahach Gidola karila. Aval, Bahach. Right, so each of them is known as a Gidola because there's always someone who's younger than them. Aval Bahach, when he uses the term Ketano, Ema modele de Rabbi Yossi. The Ketano, when he says the word Ketano, he means Lachtana de Kulu karila. And he's calling the youngest of the youngest. Why is that? What would the Havamina? The Havamina would have been that by Gedola, Gedola is a term where it's is positive or viewed positively. The father wants to present his daughters as being Gedolot, meaning that Sheva Chula Adam Rashi says, Lekrot Bito Lashon Gedola, or Gedola. So therefore, when it comes to Gedola, Rabbi Meir believes that he would say the word Gedola or description of his daughters. The adjective Gedola would be used on all of his daughters except for the youngest of the youngest, because it's a positive term. But never, when it comes to ketana, which is not a positive term, then we just say, when he uses the term ketana, he means really ketana shabtanot like Rabbi Yossi. So therefore, the Mishnah brings the other case to show you that even in that instance, Rabbi Meir believes there's a suffix on everybody who's younger than the oldest of the oldest. Why is that? Because kevin de'ika zutra mina, since there's always someone younger, lahach gedola karila, therefore they call her gedola, ava b'hai me'modulei the Rabbi Yossi. That he will agree over here that Rabbi Yossi, the ketana, lahach ketana, the kulu karila, only the youngest would he call the ketana. V'it mar baha, if we only had the case of ketana in our Mishnah, baha kamar Rabbi Yossi. There's when Rabbi Yossi has his opinion that ketana means just the unambiguous term, the youngest of the youngest. Al bahach by gedola, maybe modi lay the Rabbi Meir, he would agree to Rabbi Meir because gedola is a positive term. So it's a positive term, he might assign it to all of his daughters that are not the youngest of the youngest. So kamash malon or tzricha, that we need both the case of gedola and Ketana. The Mishnah teaches that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi hold their positions in both instances, both by Gedola and by Ketana. Lememra, so from this it sounds like that Rabbi Meir sever machet inish nafshei l'sveika, that a person is willing to put himself or will make a statement that leaves him in a position of safek. Why? Because Rabbi Meir says exactly that. If you say the term Gedola or Ketana, it can reference to many of your children or numbers of your children. And we don't say, no, he would say the unambiguous term. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, sever lo machet inish l'sveika, when a person makes a statement, we have to look at the statement and say, what is the most unambiguous, right, way to interpret this statement? And therefore, when we say gedola, it means gedola should be gedolot. And when it says ketana, it should be ketana, should be ketanot. Gemara says, is that really true? We see that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi have this exactly the opposite opinion somewhere else. That's none. We have a Mishnah. No, they're out of Pesach. Someone says that I'm restricted in something until Pesach. Also at Yegia, then he's also until Pesach comes. I mean, as soon as Pesach comes, then the neder expires. At Yehei Pesach, says until Pesach has been, then Asur at Yehetze. Then he's Asur until Pesach finishes. I mean, if he says I'm Asur in some sort of object until at Yehei Pesach, that means until Pesach has been. Pesach has been means that I finished. So at the day Pesach ends, then the neder expires. Ad Pnei Pesach, if he says until the face of Pesach, Rabbi Meir Omer, Asur at Yehetze. Rabbi Meir says that he's only Asur until the beginning of Pesach. Rabbi Meir at Yehetze, that he's Asur until the end. Why? What's the argument here? The argument here is about Pnei. What does Pnei HaPesach mean? The face of Pesach. You could say face of Pesach means before Pesach, and as soon as Pesach comes, you're over. Or you could say Pnei HaPesach means as long as there's still Pesach left, I'm still before Pesach. I'm still Pnei HaPesach. I'm still in front of the Pesach or facing the Pesach. So therefore, even the second to last day or the last day, I'm still looking at a period of time where Pesach is still there, and they can all be called Pnei HaPesach. So what do we see? Rabbi Meir says, no, it means the unambiguous Pnei HaPesach is the first day where as soon as I get to Pesach, it's over, because the day before is called Pnei HaPesach. That's the unambiguous time where it's called before Pesach. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says, no, you have to wait until Pesach's over, because every moment in Pesach has another moment afterward, and it can still be called Pnei HaPesach. That's the exact opposite of their opinions over here. So I'm Rabbi Chanina Bar Avdime, I'm a Rav Mechlefet HaShita. The Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi's opinions are messed up or switched around in the Darim, that you should reverse their positions in the Darim. Ba'atanya, we have a Braisa that supports that it's mixed up in the Darim, because it says, Zeklau, Koshes Mano Kavua, anything that has a fixed period of time, like Pesach, which is always 7 days, Ba'amar Ad Pnei, and he says until Pnei, Rabbi Meir Omer Ad Yetze. So over here you see Rabbi Meir says until it leaves, right? Not like we found in the Mishnah in the Darim, but similar to what we find in our Mishnah over here. The Meir means it believes that as long as there's still a chance that it could have been called this item, then we say that that's included in your statement. Only until Pesach comes. Again, similar to our Mishnah, not like the Mishnah we quoted from the Darim. Again, Rabbi Yossi's position is that it's only when it can be unambiguously called this, and that is only before Pesach. Before Pesach is still called Pnei Pesach, according to everyone, that's the unambiguous way to call it, and a person doesn't put himself into a suffix. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi's machlokes is b'shtei kitot banot. That's only when there are two sets of daughters. I mean, there's two sets of daughters from two different wives. Aval b'kat achat, with one set of daughters, divya kol gdola mamash ktana mamash. That when it means the oldest and the youngest, he means the oldest of that group, the unambiguous oldest, which means the very oldest. And ktana means the youngest, but the unambiguous youngest, which means the very youngest. Why is that? Because emtzait Bishma Karila, because if he was talking about the middle daughter, he wouldn't call her older or younger. He calls her by her name, meaning that older and younger, when you have a single group of girls, the older will only be the oldest, and the younger will be the youngest. Anybody else you'll call by their name, which is not true when you have two sets of daughters. Then everything becomes relative. Because of the two sets of daughters, then older and younger could be terms that are not necessarily clear. So Amrle Ravada Ramatna Labaya Yamato, according to this, Emtsait Shibikachnia Tishtare. According to your reasoning, even if you have two katim, meaning even if you have two groups of daughters, the middle daughter in the second group of girls should be muteret. Because again, Gedola can only mean the oldest. Should mean the oldest in the first group or the oldest in the second group. And Katana could mean, again, we're unsure which Katana, but it could be the youngest in the first group or the youngest in the second group. Okay, here is where there's only two daughters in the group, and therefore there is no emtsait to talk about. That makes sense that we're only talking about whether two daughters. Because if there was a middle daughter there, you should have written about it. I mean, you should have spoken about the case of the middle daughter. All we talk about here is a ktana and a gdola, and we say that it's ktana shibktanot, gdola shibktanot, or ktana shibgdola. All the terms that are mentioned in the Mishnah never mention a middle daughter. So Mar says, "V'lim tameich emtzait shebishib kat mishona devadai sfeika." The middle daughter, who is a definitely in the safek here, right? Vasirilo, and we say it's asur mi ktanilo. Her, she's not written here. She's not mentioned in the Mishnah. If you say that the problem here is that they're not written in the Mishnah, then also in the first case where it's the first set of girls, where we say all of them are going to be asur because they're all gdolot relative to the second set of girls. How can we say, well, you didn't mention the middle girl, maybe she should be muteret? Mara says, how can you compare these cases? There, the Mishnah mentions that the youngest girl in the older set, right, will be Asur. So certainly the middle girl in the first set, who's older than the youngest girl, will also be classified as a Gdola. That you don't need to write in the Mishnah. But in our case over here, Im Ita De'ika, over here in the second case, if she's around, then you should have mentioned her name. The fact that you didn't mention her name, Nitnia, shows you that we're not talking about a middle daughter or a case of a middle daughter. The case of Pesach is the equivalent of one kat. And nevertheless, upligi, and nevertheless they argue. Meaning, because Pesach doesn't have two sets of girls, it's one Pesach. The Pesach is either before the Pesach, after the Pesach. So why over there do we say that we have a safek all the way along? And nevertheless, we have a machlokas. So Amar Lei Hatam, Belishna de Amalka Miflige. Over there, the machlokas in Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yose, is not about whether a person puts himself into a position of safek or not, but rather the machlokas over there is about the lashon itself, the language itself. What does it mean? Mar Savar Pnei Pesach had Kamei Pischa. Pnei Pesach means before Pesach. Mar Savar had Mafne Pischa. Pnei Pesach doesn't mean the face of Pesach before Pesach, but Mafne until it's passed by, until Pesach has been expired, until after Pesach. So it's a machlokas in the meaning of the word Pnei Pesach, not a machlokas about whether a person puts himself into a position of safek. And therefore, in our instance over here, again, to go over this, Rabbi Meir, according to Abaye, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi only argue about the fact when there are two sets of daughters. If there was a single set of daughters, then everybody agreed Gadola means the oldest and Katana means the youngest. So then, why don't we say that in that instance, if the second group of girls, the middle girl should be Muteret, meaning that based on what you're saying, right, the only suffix we have is about whether it's the oldest or the youngest. But the middle girl in the second set should not be under, she should not be classified as a Gedola. Gemara says no, because the second case in the Mishnah is a case where there's only two daughters. There's an older daughter and a younger daughter. And therefore, we can't discuss. We don't discuss Emtzait. And the Gemara says, I can prove that to you because the Gemara doesn't even mention this Emtzait. It doesn't mention. So the Gemara says then, well, if you want to say that the Mishnah has to write Emtzait to be addressing it, then let's say also the middle girl in the first set of girls also should not be included under the suffix, and we know that's not true. She's in the suffix of the Isur, and it's not written in the Mishnah, so how can you prove anything from that? Gemara says, no, those cases are different. The Gemara addressed directly the girl that was younger there. In the first set of girls, the youngest girl we said is Asur. So Kal v'chomer, that the girl that's older than her will be classified as a Gdola, that we don't even need to address. Here, in our case of the second set of girls, if we say the oldest girl is Asura, that doesn't imply anything about the middle girl. And if we say the Ktana is Mutarit, again, doesn't imply anything about the middle girl. So if you don't write anything about it, that means that she must not exist. And then the last thing we discussed as well, Pesach. What about Pesach? Pesach looks like a case of Kadachat. There's only one Safek. There's only one period of time that is in Safek here. And yet, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi argue about what the meaning is. So we see that Machlokas extends even to Kadachat. Even within a context of one issue or one item, we would say still there is a Safek. The Gemara says, no, Machlokas by the case of Pesach is about the language. What does the word Pnei Pesach mean? Does it mean the face of Pesach or the Mafne Pesach until Pesach has passed? Not the Machlokas about whether each moment or the Safek that we talked about with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi until this point. Okay, we'll stop over here.